True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
Oh, and first pitch crushing! Deep left field! This is way back! Welcome on!
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball at cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
Max Scherzer was awesome. Corbin Burns was not. Again. Welcome in to Fantasy Baseball Today on Tuesday, September 20th. Frank Stanfield joined by Scotty Dubs, Scott White. Today on the show, who is the SP1 for next season? I feel like nobody has earned that right. No one has taken it and ripped it away. So we'll get Scotty.
Sandy Alcantara.
Potentially in points leagues. I don't know. We'll talk about it.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. Maybe Jacob deGrom again. Oh. I know whoever it is, I'm not drafting him in round one. And that may apply even in points leagues.
I think I agree with you, Scott. But we have a lot of time to evaluate all of that. I do have a dynasty question. Which baby tiger would you prefer in dynasty between Spencer Torkelson and Riley Green? And we do have some grade the seasoned.
I thought you were talking about the actual animal. Baby tigers.
Yeah, you know, they're baby tigers.
The famous litter at a zoo or something.
Something like that. Anyway, we'll get to all of it. Let's jump in.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Oh, my goodness gracious, Scott. You are up.
Okay, let's talk about Corbin Burns because he let a bunch of people down again today here in crunch time. Bad start against the Mets. 5 earned runs in 5 2/3 innings. Struck out only 4. And, you know, most of the damage came on a 3-run homer to Pete Alonso. So I'll make that excuse for Corbin Burns right up front. But it doesn't change the fact that in his past, I forgot to write down the number. I think it's his past 5 starts, 6 starts. How long has these struggles been going on?
I have post All-Star break, which is 12 starts long, where he now has a 4.69 ERA over that stretch.
That's not the side I was going to give. Okay, so actually the past 7 starts now for Corbin Burns, he has a 5.62 ERA, 127 whip, 9.1 K per nine.
Yuck.
And that's even including that 8-inning, 14 strikeout effort a couple turns ago. So even with that one awesome outing in there, he still has an ERA approaching 6 in his last 7 starts. And this is for the guy who, I mean, this is why we say we don't know who's the top pitcher going to be drafted next year, because Corbin Burns is not making a very strong case here. And crunch time. Now, Like, is he broken? Is this, how worried should we be about this? I mean, obviously it keeps happening, so that makes it concerning, but velocity is fine. Swinging strike rate is really good. For what it's worth, he blames pitch selection. He thinks, he says the stuff is right where he wants it to be. He needs to pick his pitches better to put hitters away instead of giving up 3-run homers to Pete Alonso. Maybe that's it. Maybe there's a pitch tipping situation going on. I don't know. I don't think you can sit him. I mean, presuming you're locked in for this week already.
Yeah.
His next matchup is against the Reds. Even if you weren't locked in for this week, you're going to sit Corbin Burns against the Reds. I don't see how that's possible. And then next week, presuming your season goes right through the last day of the season, he'll line up for two starts against the Marlins and the Diamondbacks. You know, yeah. What? Will he actually make that second start? I'm going to count up starts and make sure.
I think he would, because what I'm looking at is the Marlins on September 29th, five games after that. Well, I guess four starts after that. 2, 3, 4. That would take him to October 4th. So that's the second to last game of the season. And the Brewers might really need that game. So I would imagine that he will make at least three more starts. One against the Reds, one against the Marlins, and one against the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yep.
Obviously, they could, if they fall out of the race or something, they could insert Jason Alexander again. And he could, they could just skip Burns' last turn. But presuming everything goes as lined up, Reds, Marlins, Diamondbacks as what he has for the remainder of the season. And since nothing seems that wrong other than the results itself, I think you go down with the ship and hope that he turns things around. He's inevitably going to turn things around. You just hope it happens at with enough time to still help you.
Mm-hmm. Brewers currently 2.5 games out of the final wild card spot. So mathematically, they could be eliminated by then, which you kind of alluded to, Scott. So there's a chance he doesn't make that last start. But we will see as we get closer to that one. Scott, do you watch your pitchers in fantasy when they are actually pitching?
Sometimes.
I feel like whenever I do it, it ends poorly. I don't. Yeah. It's happened all season long. Obviously, we had the long running bit where I couldn't watch Charlie Morton anymore because, you know, every time I would watch him, he would get blown up, and it just kind of turned out he had a bad season. But I just feel like, man, in the biggest spots, I have Corbin Burns in two head to head championship matchups right now. Watch the start, and he just absolutely gets crushed. It's so deflating, man. And then I come on here and I gotta put on my smile and try and act like I'm not angry at the world because of Corbin Burns. But
you'd be a little angry. You don't have to be happy all the time, Frank.
I know.
You show people you're a person with multitudes.
Yeah. I always gotta control myself with the tweets because I always just like as if it's going to like Corbin Burns is gonna read it. He's not going to read it. Most likely not. But yeah, I gotta control myself there.
You don't want to drop a bunch of F-bombs on Twitter? Are you like, are you just like seething on the inside all the time, just trying to keep it bottled up? Because that's, I don't know that that's healthy.
Yeah. I think I might need a punching bag in my house or something like that because I get pretty angry watching these starts. I dug into the numbers too, Scott. The second half is what I looked at. 11 home runs has kind of been an issue. I noticed the home runs per nine, the home run to fly ball ratio is up a little bit for Corbin Burns. It's just everything is kind of off around the margins. It's nothing that really stands out. The swinging strike rate is down like 2.5 percentage points from 16.4% in the first half, 13.9% in the second half. The BABIP is up a little bit. The strand rate is down. I looked at the pitch mix. It's basically the same. I don't see anything like concrete wrong. So it's just like, a little bit of everything seems to be off with Corbin Burns, and that's how he gets to this point. But I agree. I don't think you can not play him. I'm playing him, obviously, in my matchups. It's just, it's really, really frustrating right now. On the other side, Max Scherzer obviously makes his return here, and he was perfect in six innings, pulled after six perfect innings because, you know, first start back. Gets 68 pitches in there, so they're obviously playing it safe with Max Scherzer, but he does put up 9 strikeouts in this one, 15 swinging strikes on 68 pitches. It's just a fantastic ratio. seemingly amped up in the start for Scherzer because the velocity was up across the board. Fastball up 1.1 miles per hour, slider up 1.5 miles per hour. The curve was up nearly 1 mile per hour as well. And now for the season, he is down to a 2.15 ERA, well over a strikeout per inning, 162 over 133 and two thirds. Control has been fantastic, 23 walks and 21 starts. Swinging strike rate is still there. And that kind of leads me to the question I started the show with. I think Max Scherzer probably has as good of a claim to being the SP1 drafted next year as anybody. I think the only risk, Scott, is, you know, his age and the fact that he's been a little bit more prone to missing time the past couple of seasons. But what do you think about that? Max Scherzer, SP1.
Well, I mean, if I'm going to critique him specifically as the number one SP drafted next year, I would say, well, if you're going to take an old guy, why not just take Justin Verlander? I know Scherzer has been a more reliable, or I don't know if reliable is the right word, but he has a higher strikeout rate than Verlander. But as you point out, he's been less durable than Verlander, and that's over a few years now of him, you know, not always being there when you want him there. So I think that alone would make me say, okay, probably Scherzer shouldn't be the number one starting pitcher drafted. But the thing is, like, it's not with clear enough reasoning that I really care. I would say he'll be one of many pitchers who are good enough to be the top pitcher drafted, which is another reason why I'm probably not going to be the one who takes the first starting pitcher drafted, because yeah, you can make a case for Scherzer, Verlander, Sandy Alcantara, Shane McClanahan. I'm sure Corbin Burns will still be in that discussion. I'm sure Gerrit Cole will still be in that discussion. And do I care that much which of those I get? No. And even the next tier after them is pretty strong. So I am going to be partying like it's 2009 next year. I'm just going back to my old drafting strategy in fantasy baseball that I had for the longest and then I executed most successfully, which is play the position tiers and wait as long as you can to fill starting pitcher. I think that's, you know, going back to the classics. I think that's MLB's trying to go back to the classics with his rule changes, and I'm going to go back to the classics with my drafting strategy, because I think the way the league is evolving justifies it again.
Just on the Scherzer versus Verlander conversation, I think I trust the skills of Scherzer a little bit more, but you're right that I think it's probably just a pretty big tier for that SP1, and you just want to wait until whoever is being drafted last, or if you do a salary cap draft, whoever whoever's thrown out first or going for the cheapest, you just kind of go for that player. But yeah, I think all of those names you mentioned, Scherzer, Burns, Cole, Sandy, Shane McClanahan, Verlander, there's like a tier. I think Zach Wheeler probably has, you know, a claim in there somewhere too.
I'd put him in the next tier, but
okay.
I mean, sure, he was a Cy Young contender last year, so it's like there are pitchers beyond that top group of six, I think it is, that we just named, that could certainly contend for the Cy Young.
Yeah.
But I think their ultimate upside is a little lower.
I think you've got it right though, Scotty. That's the early lean for drafting next year is, you know, just kind of wait and grab whichever pitcher falls the furthest of those top. I think it's going to wind up being like 10 or 12. Like Woodruff is in that mix too. I still think he's really good. Shane Bieber has bounced back in a major way. I don't know. We'll have a long time to figure it out, but
yeah,
I did have one
Rodon.
More. Yeah. Carlos Rodon is amazing. Dylan Cease. We haven't even mentioned him yet. There's a lot of really, really great pitchers. Spencer Strider. I think someone will try and make the case for it. I did have another, you know, honorable mention for Oh My Goodness Gracious. I don't think this matters much, but obviously it was a great performance for Tyler Alexander, who took a no-hitter into the seventh inning at the Baltimore Orioles, where he wound up going at 7 shutout, 2 hits, 2 walks, 4 strikeouts in that one. He did have just 5 swinging strikes, just a 22% CSW. That's called strikes plus whiffs. Not really sure how it happened. I didn't really see anything in the pitch mix. And even with this outing, he has a 4.91 ERA. His final two matchups are against the White Sox and the Twins. Does this matter, Scott? Tyler Alexander?
No. I mean, 19 earned runs in his previous 4 starts. The odd 7 shutout effort. You know, particularly since it's not like he was missing a bunch of bats or crazy. Or anything crazy like that. No, we can ignore Tyler Alexander.
All right, let's jump into the waiver wire hitters. And man, we'll get to these names in a bit, Scott, but nice day for your sleeper hitters. Carlos Santana, awesome first day of the week. Michael Tolia, also.
Yeah, he's made the whole week. I can't get the Carlos Santana pick wrong after he hits a grand slam and homers for a second time in the first game. And it was like the rest of the matchups are the ones I like for him more than what he faced in this one.
Mm-hmm. We'll get to those in just a bit. I do want to mention first Eduardo Escobar, just because he's more highly rostered, so he's more of like a shallow league ad at this point in the season than anything else. But he went 2-for-3 with a walk and a double, and now in 22 games since returning, he is batting .360 with 6 home runs, putting the ball in the air, hitting it relatively hard, 17% barrel rate during that time. But Joey Meneses, Scott, I know it's a tough week of matchups. This first game is up against Kyle Wright. Just kind of keeps doing his thing. 4-for-4 here on Monday. Picks up his first steal of the season. He's still batting .325. He's got an OPS over 900. Who would you prefer if you just need a corner infielder the rest of the way? Eduardo Escobar or Joey Meneses?
I think I'd prefer Escobar. We talked about how the Nationals matchups for the final week of the season aren't great either. Mm. And matchups aren't everything. But if we're saying matchups don't matter for Joey Meneses, then we're basically saying he's a stud.
Right.
And that's still a little hard to accept. And I've been as open-minded about Joey Meneses as I think anybody. Prior to this four-hit game, he had gone 1-for-13. Still, he's batting .315 in September, .320 overall. He's been really good, and every time you think he might begin slowing down, he has a game like this. So I'm just wanting to pull up the Mets matchups to see if they were as bad as the Nationals for the final week of the season. They're not great. You know, obviously, if you're not looking to fill third base specifically, since Meneses can't do that, I guess between him and Escobar, I would take Meneses. But it's with some hesitation, clearly.
Okay, would you take Escobar over Gunnar Henderson or Vinny Pasquantino, who we spoke about yesterday?
No, not a chance.
All right, so if we're just ranking those, it's Gunnar, it's Vinny P, then, you know, Escobar, Meneses is kind of a toss-up, depending
on. Yeah, slight edge to Meneses.
Cool. Some deeper corner infielders, the ones I just mentioned, Carlos Santana, 2-for-5, double dong, grand slam. He now has multiple homers 3 times in his last 8 games and up to 19 home runs total. Still widely available, obviously. These are, again, more so deeper corner infielders. He's 16% rostered. Michael Tolia, I know he made the cut as a sleeper hitter as well, and it's his final week, a full week of Coors Field, and it was a game of firsts for him. He had 2 triples. I believe they came in the same inning, something wild like that, which I heard them talking about on the broadcast. It was some kind of historical feat. It sounds pretty crazy. 2 triples in 1 inning. And they were his first 2 career triples. He also stole a base, which was his first steal of his career as well. He strikes out a lot, but Michael Tolia puts the ball in the air a lot, which obviously will play well in Coors Field. What do you think, Scott? Santana versus Tolia, rest of season, which is 2.5 weeks.
So they were not in the same inning. The triples. They were in consecutive innings.
Gotcha.
So Tolia versus who did you say?
Tolia versus Santana.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I want to start Tolia outside of Coors Field. The strikeouts are a major concern, but obviously Coors Field is a magical place that can make up for those shortcomings, as we saw in his first game back there. But the reason why I doubt many people actually started him, despite my recommendation, is because of the 4-game road trip that he was just coming off of. Tolia went 0-for-14 with 8 strikeouts. His average exit velocity went from, it was 92 miles per hour, which is really good, before that awful stretch of 4 games. And then it dropped to 88.2. So, which, you know, so it tells you something about sample size, right? That his average exit velocity can change that much over a stretch of a few games. But yeah, I think once he leaves Colorado, we're not going to bother with Tolia the rest of this season. But I do think there's a chance he's somebody who impacts the ball hard enough that he, particularly with the help of that extremely favorable home environment, he can overcome a high strikeout rate. I'm hopeful. Anyway, I'm not saying he's going to be a stud, but that he can remain a useful fantasy option.
And if you just need a corner infielder or a utility bat or an outfielder in a daily lineup league for the rest of this week, man, Michael Tolia, again, he's got 6 more games in Coors Field. He is 2% rostered on Yahoo, so I know that's where many of the daily lineup leagues are played, and did have his splits pulled up. In 7 home games, he is batting .296 with an OPS over 1,000. In 10 road games, he's hitting .171 with a .559 OPS. That is Michael Tolia, and I'm pretty sure you could have guessed that just based on being a young Rockies hitter. Do you have the need for speed? You need some steals down the stretch? Well, there could be 2 names available for you. John Birdie, just a massive game here on Monday. He had a sock and 2 shoes, his 4th homer, and he's now up to 36 steals on the season. Since returning, however, from the IL, 30 games John Birdie has played. He's hitting .212, 2 homers, 8 steals. He's 49% rostered. And Miles Straw has played well recently. He went 1-for-2 with 2 walks and 2 steals as well here on Monday. Last 15 games for him, he's hitting .389, 3 steals, 9 runs scored, 26% rostered. What do you think, Scott? Who would you prefer, Birdie or Straw, if you need steals down the stretch?
Birdie.
Even though he hasn't looked that great since returning?
I mean, look what Miles Straw's been doing.
Yeah.
He's what is he batting on the year? .218?
That's pretty bad.
And hasn't been nearly as consistent of .217 and hasn't been nearly as consistent of a base stealer as Birdie. Even I mean, Birdie, since returning from the IL, has 8 steals.
True.
So that's, you know, in less than 2 months' time, that's still like close to a 30 steal pace just during that stretch since he's returned.
Gosh.
Meanwhile, Straw has 3 steals this month. He had 2 steals last month. He had 2 steals the month before. He had 2 steals the month before. So over the last 2/3 of the season, Miles Straw has a total of 9 steals.
Yeah. And John Birdie has that in his last 30 games. So
right.
All right. Yeah. Fair enough. You win, Scott. If you need steals, John Birdie, it is. And, you know, I didn't realize Miles Straw was really that bad. Coming into the year, I definitely got duped. I thought he was like a legit pretty good hitter, good eye at the plate. Yeah. I thought he had good contact skills and just everything went wrong.
I thought the same about Nicky Lopez. Remember those arguments we had, Nicky Lopez versus Miles Straw?
The answer was neither. And speaking of
the answer was John Birdie.
Yes. The answer is always John Birdie if you need speed. Should any of these players be rostered in more leagues over the final couple weeks? Nick Gordon went 2-for-4 with his 9th home run. And in 44 games since the start of August, he's batting .301 with 5 homers, 3 steals. And we've pointed this out a few times. The StatCast data for Nick Gordon is actually pretty awesome, just low key. Mm-hmm. 90th percentile expected slugging percentage, 81st percentile in average exit velocity. He is only 25% rostered. And, Scott, say it with me. What's dead may never die. Joey Gallo, he's back. Not really. He went 2-for-3 and he hit his 18th home run, but he now has 6 homers in 33 games with the Dodgers. He's playing a little bit better with them than he was with the Yankees. It's hard to be much worse than he was with the Yankees. What do you think, Scott? Should these two be rostered in more than 25 or 33% of leagues? Gordon,
I mean, it's very, very slightly better with the Dodgers. He entered this game batting .170 with them versus .159 with the Yankees.
Still better.
So, I mean, it feels better because expectations are so much lower now.
Yeah.
The Yankees gave up a bundle of prospects for him. The Dodgers gave up nothing. So, you don't like anything Gallo does is just gravy for them. But in fantasy, no, I don't think he's redeemed his value at all. Let's see, who else am I commenting on? Sorry.
Nick Gordon.
Nick Gordon. Yeah, no, what's funny is if you gave Nick Gordon's StatCast data to Randy Arozarena, it would be like, okay, I can see why Randy Arozarena is putting up these numbers. If you gave Randy Arozarena's StatCast data to Nick Gordon, it'd be like, okay, I can see why Nick Gordon's putting up these numbers. So I'm not really sure how to square that circle. But I mean, clearly we've arrived at the point where we can just ignore the fact that StatCast doesn't, you know, that Randy Arozarena, we can accept that he's just a guy who dramatically outperforms his StatCast numbers. And maybe Nick Gordon is the other way around. I would rather have Nick Gordon. Like, you're looking to fill a middle infield spot on the cheap. I think he's a better choice than a lot of the guys we've talked about. Like, unless you need Steele specifically, I'd rather have Nick Gordon than John Birdie, you know, if it's a points league scenario or whatever. Mm-hmm. But is he that good? Is he as good as StatCast suggests he should be? Probably not.
Mm-hmm. And I assume Nick Gordon would be behind someone like Elvis Andrus and Luis Ranjifo. That one feels pretty close. What do you think?
Yeah, that's pretty close. Probably Ranjifo, but it wouldn't surprise me if Nick Gordon was actually the better of the two mm-hmm. to finish out the year.
And while we're talking about middle infielders, I wanted to mention Jorge Mateo, who has really slowed down. His last 30 games, he's hitting 198, a 588 OPS during that time. He's down to 60% rostered. Probably should still hold him in category leagues just because it wouldn't surprise me if he steals five bases over the final 2 weeks. But if you did pick him up in points leagues, this is Jorge Mateo. He could probably go.
Yeah. I mean, I could see in roto leagues the fact he's eligible at shortstop and outfield and provides stolen bases when he is going well. That's the thing. I mean, just because he has been bad over the past 2-3 weeks, whatever it's been, doesn't mean he's going to be bad over the next two. And of course, we know that, assuming he will be his bad process in May and in June. But in September, you know, we kind of flake on that. Like, somebody was asking me if they should sit Matt Olson for this week. I was like, no, he's still Matt Olson. Fortunately, he goes out and gets two hits. And so already that's seeming like the right move. But yeah, I mean, good players eventually come around. Is Jorge Mateo for sure a good player? No, but he meets certain statistical needs in ways that few players can.
I don't think this matters, but might be something to remember for deeper leagues next year. Probably only like NL only, but Brian De La Cruz went 2-for-5 with a grand slam. It was his 10th home run. He's got 3 homers over his last 6 games. And his StatCast data is kind of interesting as well. 75th percentile in max exit velocity. He's got a 270 expected batting average, 469 expected slug. Wouldn't surprise me if he can never achieve his expected numbers just playing in Marlins Park, obviously. But it's clear, at least this season, Brian De La Cruz impacts the ball pretty hard, so just probably someone to remember for next year. Deeper leagues, he's 2% rostered. What do you think, Scott? Anything on him?
I don't know that he's ever going to be like a true everyday player. Seems like more of a fourth outfielder type.
Yeah.
On a bad team, in a bad ballpark. Yeah, I can't get that excited about Brian De La Cruz.
They should have Jorge Soler back next year. Avisail Garcia, you know, both signed both guys to contracts just last year, so presumably those guys will be back in the lineup on opening day for the Miami Marlins. Which baby tiger would you rather buy in Dynasty? No, I'm not talking about, well, I was going to say local petting zoo, but like, you can't pet a tiger, I don't think, like, right?
No, that doesn't happen. I wouldn't. I can't imagine, no matter how young the tiger cubs are, any parent is letting their 4-year-old in there to pet it.
Can you tell that I don't have kids? Because I don't think that I'd be very good at it. Spencer Torkelson went 3-for-4 with 2 doubles and 3 runs scored. He's doing some things since returning from the minors. 14 games played, 280 batting average, 1 homer, and 839 OPS. He's making a lot of contact, 14% strikeout rate. He's hitting the ball very hard. 95 mile per hour average exit velocity, and he's putting in the air 13% barrel rate for Spencer Torkelson, albeit very small sample size. Riley Green has been, I would say, a pretty big letdown this year. 79 games played. He's kind of been in and out of the lineup. Obviously, you know, started the season off wrong with, I believe it was a fracture in his foot. Is that what
it was? I think that's right. Yeah.
But Riley Green, 253 batting average, 5 homers, 1 steal, 4 caught stealing, sub 700 OPS. StatCast data does not look great. He strikes out. He hits the ball on the ground a lot. But, you know, Scott, look, these are still they're obviously not as highly regarded as they were entering the season, but they had huge, huge prospect pedigree. And, you know, this offseason, you could look to buy low on these guys in Dynasty. So, I don't know. I guess give me your thoughts on each from, like, a long-term perspective. And if you just had to choose one, would you go with Torque or Riley Green?
Yeah, they were both consensus top five prospects overall coming into the year. Torkelson, of course, a former number one overall pick. Green was a former number five overall pick. I think drafting either next year is just it's going to be a blind faith sort of pick. Just, okay, I'm told this guy has a lot of upside. They obviously showed it in the minors. Maybe this is the year they come through and break through with the kind of numbers we were expecting from them all along. And there's nothing wrong with that if the price is right. Right? Like, if we're talking a late round pick, I would invest a late round pick in either Torkelson or Green next year. Green being an outfielder playing the weaker position. I mean, we're back, you know, when I was talking earlier about reverting to my old drafting strategy, which there was a heavy emphasis on position scarcity. You know, we're kind of talking about pitchers at the time, but that was the other half of that equation. Because first base stands out as clearly the deepest position in fantasy again, like it used to in the good old days. And so that's probably the biggest knock on Torkelson, just that he's exclusively a first baseman while Green is playing the outfield. But I am encouraged by the way Torkelson's looked since returning. Only the one home run, but the walk to strikeout ratio is, I think it's 8 strikeouts to 6 walks. So he's really cut down on the strikeouts. And you mentioned he's hitting the ball hard. He's showing, over a tiny sample, he's showing signs of improvement. So I think that's very encouraging. And all positions being equal, I'd rather have Torkelson than Green for next year, just based on that. But Green plays the outfield, so he's probably going to get drafted earlier.
Is it something that you will actually try to do, I guess, in your dynasty?
It just depends what the going rate is. Dynasty?
Yeah.
You're saying, Dynasty is a different story. I don't think either of these players has lost a considerable amount of Dynasty value. Mm-hmm. Depends how deep the league is. You know, if it's a shallow league, you kind of need those prospects to perform right away or they're going to lose a ton of value. But if it's a deep Dynasty league, I don't think you're going to be able to buy that low on either of these players. Jared Kelnick's a different story. Oh, you could probably buy really low on him.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're there yet with Torkelson and Green. So that'd be a different story. But if we're talking just a redraft context, if either of them is, like I said, either one of them is available in the late round still, and it's hard to judge at this point whether they will be, then I'll be happy to take that chance on the upside, sure.
All right. Before we hit the break, just want to remind everyone to either subscribe if you haven't already to both the YouTube, to the audio podcast, whether you listen on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen, throughout the offseason, because we do have some fun content coming your way. Way too early rankings. We have lots of prospects and dynasty conversations coming your way. Hot stove will heat up likely around December, January, a lot more things happening around then. May or may not have something fun planned for the Arizona Fall League this year, but as the details come out about that, we will reveal them to you. So if you haven't subscribed, please do subscribe YouTube, follow us wherever you listen to podcasts. But if you already subscribe, don't leave because, again, we're going to have some fun stuff planned for you. Let's take a break and we'll hit the news and notes here on Fantasy Baseball Today. Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com. Everybody knows it. Toyota trucks are the stuff of legends. Rugged, durable, everlasting, Toyota makes trucks that just don't quit. And now, Toyota is driving that legacy toward the future with two of their most powerful trucks ever, the new Tundra and the all-new Tacoma.
In a half-ton Tundra, you can rule the roads from the comfort of a spacious cabin with connected tech and plenty of hauling power. The Tundra is ready to work hard and play even harder.
Or check out the all-new 24 Tacoma, redesigned and electrified to maximize your adventure. With a bevy of available off-road driving and power transfer modes, you will effortlessly crush the conditions. And with the Tacoma's reimagined interior, you'll do it in style.
And right now, your local Toyota dealer has more vehicles in stock and is making delivery on new vehicles almost every day.
So don't wait. Buy a Tundra or Tacoma today. Visit buyatoyota.com for deals and more.
Toyota, let's go places.
The news and notes. Julio Rodriguez was out of the lineup Monday, but is unlikely to require a stint on the IL. He is currently dealing with some lower back tightness. Tony Gonsolin threw a two-inning bullpen session on Monday, with the team noting an increase in velocity. He's been out since August with a strained right forearm, and even if he could make his way back, it sounds like it would just be as a reliever. He doesn't have enough time to build back up. Carlos Rodon's next start was moved to Friday against the Diamondbacks due to a blister and a cracked nail on his left hand. The good news is that he avoids Coors Field. The bad news is that he's no longer a two-star pitcher. So, I think I probably would still rather have the two starts, but get healthy. We'll see you again on Friday. Carlos Rodon. Tyler Anderson will be reinstated from the paternity list to start game two of Tuesday's doubleheader against the Arizona Diamondbacks. Luis Severino will return and start Wednesday against the Pirates. He built up to 57 pitches in his last rehab outing. Scott, would you start Severino if you have him in a daily lineup league on Wednesday against the Pirates?
So he threw 57, you said, in the last rehab outing?
Yeah, maybe he gets up to like 70, 75.
The matchup is so good against the Pirates that I might risk it. It's risky. I mean, we don't really know how he's going to look until he gets out there. Mm-hmm. And sometimes pitchers are just a little off, even really good pitchers, when they return from the IL from long absence like that. But the Pirates being such a weak matchup, and the fact Severino actually did have something of a rehab assignment, unlike John Gray, let's say. Yeah, I'd lean yes on that.
Severino, 84% rostered on CBS, 72% rostered on Yahoo. If you do have any type of start limit, I wouldn't use one of those starts on Severino, but if you're just trying to pick up as much volume as you can, then I think it's okay against the Pirates. Chris Bryant took batting practice ahead of Monday's game with the Giants. He's been out since July 31st with plantar fasciitis. He's going to be an interesting one to try and rank next year because, man, the guy just cannot stay healthy, unfortunately. Freddie Peralta threw off a mound on Monday, the first time since hitting the IL a few weeks back with shoulder fatigue. Could be back before the end of the season with the Brewers. Trevor Rogers is dealing with a grade 1 lat strain and will be shut down for the remainder of the season, which we speculated on yesterday's podcast, but now it sounds like it is actually happening for sure. Sonny Gray left Monday's game after two innings due to right hamstring tightness. You know, Scott, as soon as we talk up Sonny Gray, he goes out and does something like this. Can't trust the guy.
I mean, we weren't counting on him getting injured.
True.
But yeah, it always felt like we were playing with fire. With that one, he was outperforming his ERA estimators and didn't have a particularly good swinging strike rate. Not even as good of a ground ball rate as in the past. But at some point, you just got to hop aboard and see where it takes you. And unfortunately, it drove off the tracks this time.
Ah, Sonny Gray. Gets you every time. Tyler Glasnow made another rehab start on Sunday, going two perfect innings with four strikeouts. Reports are that he feels, quote, very good. I'm not sure that he will make a fantasy impact this year, but I'm looking forward to seeing Tyler Glasnow again next season. Brendan Rodgers, who was out of the lineup on Monday, will undergo an MRI on his left hamstring. Domingo Germán, who was moved to the bullpen this weekend, will likely rejoin the Yankees rotation with the injury to Frankie Montas. Cal Raleigh was out of the lineup on Monday with a jammed left thumb. Eric Lauer is a candidate to return and make a short start on Friday against the Reds. Aaron Ashby will be reinstated to start a bullpen game on Tuesday against the Mets. And no, you should not pick up Aspi, you should not look to stream him because A, he was not good before getting hurt, and this is likely to be a short start, only one or two innings projected against the Mets on Tuesday. He's also been out since late August due to shoulder inflammation. That is Aaron Aspi. Tyler McGill was reinstated on Monday, but is only expected to work as a reliever for the Mets the rest of the season. Jorge Soler will not require off-season surgery and will take part in core strengthening work for the next 3 weeks before resuming baseball activities. He's been out since July with lower back spasms. Not really fantasy related, but congrats. We do have some teams clinching either divisions or playoff appearances. The Astros clinched the AL West. They will have a bye to the ALDS. And the Mets clinched a postseason appearance. We don't know whether or not it's going to be the NL East or the wild card yet. So congratulations to those fan bases, the Mets and the Astros. A few prospect updates, Scotty. Some promotions here towards the end of the season. The A's promoted Tyler Soderstrom and Zach Gelof to AAA. And the White Sox promoted Oscar Colas to AAA. And I don't know if you have any strong takes on any of these prospects, but I think there's a good chance we could see all of them at some point next season.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to Berger and Colas being in the White Sox lineup together.
I think I see what you're going for there, Scott.
Berger and Colas.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's what we're doing.
That's it.
But Oscar Colas, I mean, he has done some things, and I know we've received some questions about him. So,
yeah, no, he has. He's hit for really high average, and power is supposed to be his like carrying tool. So that's been encouraging to see. So he's a defector out of Cuba who also spent time in Japan. So he's well traveled and has seen a lot of things for a 24-year-old and has had a really productive first season in the minors. So yeah, I think he's a pretty attractive dynasty asset.
Mm. All right, that is Oscar Colas. Did want to check his strikeout rate.
You don't want to ask me about Jake Berger though.
We don't really know who Jake Berger is yet, but he's kind of interesting, unless you want.
I don't know if it's going to happen, but it needs to. I wish there was like a freeze.
Do you have a strong take on Coca-Cola versus Pepsi?
Well, I don't know how much of a sponsor either is for CBS programming, but
I'm pretty sure it's not existing.
I have a preference. I have a slight preference for Coca-Cola, but I don't mind either. I'm not one of those, oh, I got to have this. If you offer me that other, I'm going to splash it right back in your face. You know, like I'm not going to do that. They're both, you know, at times I'm in the mood for one or the other.
Fair enough. Yeah. I think I prefer Pepsi, but same thing. I don't drink dark soda that much. Ginger ale. That's where it's at. I don't know. Like the past 2 years, I don't know what has gotten into me, but
Ginger ale has gotten into you via your mouth.
That's exactly right. Ginger ale is where it's at, man. I do like a good ginger ale. Anyway, let's get into the rest of Monday's action. A little bit of a spin for next season as well. Which slugger do you want in 2023 between these two? I think I know the answer, but I'll ask it anyway. Austin Riley went 1-for-3 with his 37th home run, and he has slowed down a little bit. The power still remains, but 44 games since the start of August, Austin Riley is batting 226 during that time. I didn't really see anything in the underlying numbers. I think the BABIP might just be a little bit unlucky, 261 during that time. And Pete Alonso, the polar bear, he went 1-for-4 with a sock and a shoe. 36th home run, his fifth steal. I didn't know that he had any steals, so that was a pleasant surprise. But Pete Alonso on the season batting 267, 853 OPS. He also has 118 RBI, which is just massive. Scott, Riley, or Alonso next season?
I mean, just for position scarcity reasons, I got to say Riley.
Homer.
You know what's funny? I don't know if that this is worth bringing up at all. But you're talking about Pete Alonso having five steals, and I was kind of thinking, oh, that could be 15 steals next year with all the rule changes and how much I think stolen bases are going to increase. And I don't know if that's really the case. Pete Alonso's not a fast guy.
No.
Austin Riley's sprint speed is 58th percentile. It's pretty good, actually. And yet he does not have... Oh, he has only two. He has two stolen bases this year. He has two stolen bases for his entire career, as a matter of fact, with that 58th percentile sprint speed. So I wonder if he's a guy, you know, just because he's fast enough to steal bases, if he could benefit and be part of that democratization of stolen bases that I'm expecting to see next year with, you know, a dozen or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think where some of these slugger types can kind of literally just like walk or run into a few steals is when they play on a team that has other like fast players. So you get like that double steal action, which I think has really helped Freddie Freeman. I would have to look into this, but I think a good amount of Freddie Freeman's steals this season have come on double steals with Trey Turner. I just feel like I've seen that happen quite a bit, but the Braves have a lot of fast guys and you know, like if they wanted to pull off a double steal here or there, whether it's Acuna or Ozzie Albies, Vaughn Grissom, whatever it might be, I think they can do more of it. So
I can't believe we just had a conversation about Austin Riley's steals potential.
Yeah, right. What are we doing?
I don't know.
The Braves are 14. You know, it's Tuesday, September 20th,
September,
right?
September content here.
Yeah, we were just talking about Oakland's weather the other day. So we're trying to figure stuff to talk about, but the Braves are 14th in steals this season as a team. You know, I think that could probably even go up a little bit. So, yeah, who knows? Austin Riley, handful of steals next year. Scott's taking him over Pete Alonso. I think it's pretty close.
Yeah.
Let's grade the season, Scott. I have three names here. We've done a few of these recently. Amed Rosario. I mentioned him recently, and you just kind of, I know you're not an Amed Rosario guy, but pretty massive game. A sock and two shoes for him as well. The same day, two different players, him and John Birdie. It's pretty crazy stuff.
And to be clear, the sock is the home run. The shoes are the stolen bases.
Yeah. 11 home runs now for Amed Rosario and 16 steals. He also had a massive Saturday. They had a doubleheader. He went 8-for-13. He hit a home run. He stole a base over those two games as well. But now batting .283, 11 homers, 16 steals, 79 runs, 67 RBI. He's kind of a five-category contributor, Scott. Like, doesn't really stand out anywhere, but just kind of does a little bit in everything. And if this is right, CBS has him ranked as the 76th overall player in Roto this year. It's pretty massive stuff.
I think maybe by virtue of staying healthy, I don't know. That seems. Yeah. I can think of a lot more players than that I'd want in Roto.
Grade the season, Scott. Amed Rosario.
Grade the season for Amed Rosario? I mean, relative to expectations, it's probably like a B+, A-, I would say.
Yeah. Sounds about right. I'm going to pull up
He'll be a 40 steal guy next season, just because why not?
His preseason ADP was 234.2, and he's a top 100 player. So yeah.
Technically.
I think I agree with you there. It's
you know, it's funny really as hot as he's been, you know, with the eight hits in the doubleheader and the sock and two shoes, he's still batting just .280 in September.
Yeah, he was pretty cold before that, I noticed.
Yeah, and I think the OBP is below 300 for the month, so. You know, I don't want to overstate his value, but he's certainly in those deep in leagues like a standard Roto league that start a lot of hitters. He's certainly earned his lineup spot.
Last point on the Guardians here. I'm sure I was someone who also crushed them when they traded Francisco Lindor. Just didn't think the package was all that great at the time. But I mean, look at what Amed Rosario and Andrés Giménez are doing this season, and man. You know, it was a good trade for both sides. I mean, at least knowing how the Guardians want to operate their team.
Do you know what Andrés Giménez WAR is this year?
I don't really know whether or not he's a good defender, but I'll say he's like a three or four win player, something like that.
Is that you think he's a 3 or 4 win player this year? Okay.
Maybe that's too high. I'm probably selling him too high. Too low?
Ahmed Rosario's WAR this year, according to Baseball Reference, is 6.4.
Ahmed Rosario?
I'm sorry. Oh, wrong name. Andrés Giménez. Is that who you were answering for?
Yeah. That's who I was.
Andrés Giménez. Okay, so that's who we were talking about all along. Sorry.
Wow. 6.4
for Andrés Giménez.
Jeez.
Francisco Lindor has had only one season with a WAR better than that in his career.
What is Lindor's this year? If you have it pulled up, I don't know if you do.
5.3.
Wow. All right. Well, good stuff for the Guardians. Like I was saying, you know, this turned out to be a pretty good trade for them. Next up, we have Ty France, who went 2-for-4 with his 20th home run, and he is on a bit of a power binge right now. 6 homers over his last 19 games, and he's batting .272 overall, 77 RBI, only 57 runs scored. So I think that pulls down his overall ranking quite a bit. Scott, grade this season, Ty France.
Probably like a C when all said and done. You know, obviously he got off to a great start, was looking like one of the biggest finds, but it's been a rough finish, a rough second half, and it's kind of brought his numbers back down to, I think, what a lot of people, myself included, were expecting in the first place.
All right, let's wrap up with Jose Altuve, who went 2-for-4 with his 25th home run. He's batting .292 on top of that. He's got 18 steals, 89 runs scored. RBI not great, 53, but he does lead off consistently for the Astros. Has a near 900 OPS and is the 31st overall player in Roto this season. Grade the season. Mm-hmm. Jose Altuve.
A plus. I don't see how he possibly could have given us more than he has. You know, I was pretty optimistic about Jose Altuve. I think I was one of the highest guys in the industry, so I can take a little bit of credit, I guess. Obviously, can take my share of blame for certain players too, but Altuve was one I was right about, and yet not even I saw the return of the stolen bases for him. So yeah, that A+, and I think with Trey Turner losing second base eligibility and, you know, Ozzie Albies, We're going to be a little unsure about him going into next season because of all the time he lost to injury. I think Jose Altuve, unless I'm overlooking somebody, he's going to be the first second baseman drafted.
Man, I think you're probably right. Does Mookie Betts really have second base eligibility this year?
Presently does.
I mean, I know he's not going to have it next season, but.
Well, I want to double check how far away he is from that. Because I don't know how many times he's appeared at second base this year. 7 times. So, yeah, he's not going to be able to carry that over to next season.
Interesting.
But that doesn't mean he can't pick it up at some point next season.
True.
He says he likes playing second base. He says he prefers it to the outfield.
Wow. I wonder if he can kind of, maybe that's kind of part of the later half of his career situation. Mookie Betts back to second base. I know he played it in the minors coming up, right, Scott? Early on in his career, too?
Yeah, that's what he was in the minors prior to moving to the outfield. In fact, there was some uncertainty when he first got promoted to the Red Sox. They needed him in the outfield right away, but there was some uncertainty whether he'd stay there or move to the infield. Plus, moving to second base gets him closer to his buddy, Freddie Freeman, who everybody loves. So that's it. That's who everybody loves, so...
Alrighty. Jose Altuve, last point on him. I could be wrong about this, but I still don't think he's going to get the respect that he deserves in drafts.
I know. I don't know what's been going on with it because I feel like it's been a few years now. Basically, ever since the sign stealing scandal, the fantasy. I don't know that. I think at first I was blaming that. You know, the first year coming off of that, he was sliding in the rankings. Alex Bregman was sliding in the rankings. I think people were holding it against them. Performance-wise, even, but I don't think that's the reason anymore. I don't know why he's sliding. He's not getting the respect he deserves in fantasy. I mean, he used to be, and I'm not saying he deserves to be a first-round pick anymore, but in his prime, he was, you know, a consistent first-round pick. I think at this stage of his career, you could make a case for him in round 2, given how scarce second base is, especially.
Third round the latest, and I just don't think that will be the case. Again, could be wrong, but I think he probably winds up as like a fourth round pick, something like that for Altuve.
I will have so much Jose Altuve if that's the case.
We shall see. He does turn 33 in May next season, so some people might use that as a, a point against Jose Altuve. Let's wrap up with some pitching leftovers. We've got the good, the bad, and the ugly. Of course, we will start with the good. Logan Gilbert posted a career-high 11 strikeouts at the Angels. He went 6 innings, 1 run, 11 Ks, 21 swinging strikes on 98 pitches. And over his last 4 starts, he has allowed just 2 earned runs, 0.78 ERA, 34 strikeouts, just 5 walks, a 14% swinging strike rate during that time. And he's really leaned into his slider. So just basically fastball slider. And it has worked for Logan Gilbert during that time.
And what's funny about it is the slider's lost a couple miles per hour during that time, too. So he's kind of changed the way he throws it in a way that's been more effective. I mean, you mentioned the last 4 starts, 9 strikeouts or more in 3 of those 4 starts. And for most of the season, his whiff rate, his strikeout rate was pretty underwhelming. So he's kind of taken the next step in his development here, I think, Logan Gilbert, and will be probably drafted as top 30 pitcher next year, I would say.
Something like that, yeah. Top 30, top 36, but in the SP3 conversation, I think is fair. Couple other good pitchers from Monday's action. Kyle Wright turned in a quality start against the Nationals. He went 6 innings, 2 runs, 7 strikeouts in that one. Clayton Kershaw, great once again against the Diamondbacks. He went 6 innings, 1 run, 10 strikeouts, 0 walks with 19 swinging strikes on 94 pitches. And then Luis Garcia was okay against Tampa Bay. 5 shutout with 4 strikeouts in that one. I kind of get this idea that Luis Garcia is always going to have more swinging strikes than the actual strikeouts or just the ratios say that he should have. But
so kind of a Jordan Montgomery situation?
Yeah, something like that for Luis Garcia.
Yeah, maybe.
But anything you'd like to add on him, Kershaw, and Kyle Wright?
It was a nice bounce back start from Wright. He had been a little shaky lately. But beyond that, you know, Clayton Kershaw is looking amazing. As usual, guys, what's dead will never die, right?
Yes, Clayton Kershaw. The bad pitchers from Monday. Jose Suarez gave up 5 runs over 5 innings pitched. And Drew Rasmussen has now allowed 4 earned runs in each of his last 2 matchups. He went 6 innings, 4 runs allowed, 3 strikeouts against the Astros. Obviously, pretty tough matchup there. Edward Cabrera, lackluster performance, 5 innings, 3 runs, 4 strikeouts. He now has exactly 3 walks in 5 of his last 6 outings. So as much as I love the stuff, the whiffs, the ground balls, the walks are just too big of a problem right now. 4.57 walks per 9 for Edward Cabrera. Yep. And then Merrill Kelly, another mixed performance. I would say more bad than good. 4 runs allowed over 6 innings pitched, 7 strikeouts against the Dodgers. So you like to see the whiffs, but misses out on a quality start here. Gave up a lot of hard contact. He's got anything on Merrill Kelly, Edward Cabrera, Drew Rasmussen, and Jose Suarez?
So I mentioned this after Merrill Kelly's last start, and this is 2 in a row against the Dodgers, so you got to cut him some slack for that.
Yep.
But just how much it seems like this September hitting environment, which has been very favorable for home runs, just how much it seems to be hurting Merrill Kelly. Because he's basically been the exact same pitcher he's been the past couple years. Just the home run rate has been down, and that's why he's had so much success. So in his last 3, so let's do it this way. In his first 27 starts, Merrill Kelly allowed 10 home runs. In his past 3 starts, he's allowed 7 home runs.
Wow. Yeah. Not great for a guy. Merrill Kelly.
And yet he's still doing okay considering. He's still going 6 innings consistently. And as I mentioned, awful matchups the last 2 starts. So I don't know that we need to dump him. But it's just, I find it interesting.
We had the good. We had the bad. Lastly, we have the ugly, Scott. We'll give you credit for Carlos Santana. But we won't give you credit for Wade Miley, who turned back into Wade Miley against the Marlins. He gave up 7 runs over 3 innings pitched, 3 of those earned. There was a big error in the 3rd inning, which obviously caused the inning to go on longer. And then he gave up a grand slam to Brian De La Cruz. I don't think he's good, but his final 3 matchups are against the Pirates, the Reds, and the Reds again. So if you picked up Wade Miley, I might hold on to him, but what do you think?
Well, I mean, obviously I lose faith after this start, but he's had a long solid career of being, you know, kind of a streamable type in fantasy. So I don't think, you know, especially his as good as he looked in his first two starts off the IL. It wasn't one of those reluctant recommendations that, okay, I have to come up with 10 sleeper pitchers, so I'll mention Wade Miley to fill out the list. I actually picked him up and started him in a couple leagues myself. But yeah, it obviously backfired. And velocity was down 1.6 on a couple of his pitches, so I don't know what that means. I would say even with favorable matchups, I'd be reluctant to use him just for that reason.
To stream or not to stream for Tuesday, Brian Baio at the Reds, Nick Lodolo versus the Red Sox, Adrian Sampson at the Marlins, Austin Voth versus the Tigers, Patrick Sandoval at the Rangers, Aaron Civale at the White Sox, Dylan Bundy at the Royals, and Dre Jameson at the Dodgers.
It's a long list of names. I will say, who did we talk about last time we did this? Okay, so Nick Lodolo against the Red Sox, that's an easy one.
Yeah.
Patrick Sandoval at Texas. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with that. I don't think it's a must. I'm probably not going to bother with any of the others.
Yeah, I would say if Sandoval and Lodolo are already gone, which is possible, I think Adrian Sampson's probably my next favorite, but don't really love him either. On Wednesday, we have Adrian Hauser versus the Mets, Drew Smyly at the Marlins, Matt Manning at the Orioles, Jordan Lyles versus the Tigers, Rowanzi Contreras at the Yankees in a revenge game, Bailey Ober at the Royals, and Herman Marquez versus the Giants in Coors Field.
Drew Smyly at the Marlins. I mean, they're still as good of a matchup as you'll find for a left-handed pitcher, despite what happened to Wade Miley. And not loving any of the others. If you're forcing me to pick one, I think I'm going to pick probably Bailey Ober at Kansas City, but that's, you know, don't feel great about that one.
Take the Ober. We're going with Bailey at Kansas City. Team name Tuesday. This one is from Tom. O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Yow!
That was great. From,
you got that yow at the end. That's always my favorite part.
Yeah. From Dale, how much would a Waldachuk Grichuk, oh my. How much, and they spelled wood as like Alex Wood. And well, I don't know.
That's how you spell the word.
Yes,
to be fair,
I know. But I guess, wood. Alex Wood. Yeah. How much wood would a Waldachuk Grichuk? All right.
That's not bad.
From Jeremy on Twitter, to honor both Ahmed and Eddie hitting home runs on Monday, Super Rosario Brothers.
Sure.
From Neil and his four roommates who said, apologies in advance, it was late at night and our internet went out. They sent us what looks like, I don't know, 10 or 12 different team names here. Machado about nothing.
Okay, sure.
Everything Everywhere Alonzo Quants.
That's strained. Sorry.
Have you watched that movie, Scott?
I haven't. I've
heard good things.
Yeah, I definitely intend to at some point.
You spin me right round.
Okay, with you and right both in there. That's fine.
Lordess of the Springs.
Is there a Lord of the Springs? Is that, like, what is that referring to?
I think it's just Lord of the Rings.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Fun fact, I haven't seen a single Lord of the Rings movie in my life.
It doesn't surprise me. But I haven't either.
Oh, man. For anyone listening this late in the podcast, we're probably going to get some feedback for that one.
Maybe we can watch them together. Block out 12 hours for that.
Yeah, let's do a whole day watch along with our YouTube audience. 2000 Quan, a Space Mondesi. That's good.
Okay.
I like that.
Not bad. Yeah.
You don't mess with the Yoan.
That actually works. I know you like it.
Have you seen that movie, Scott?
No.
Oh, it's good.
I'm sure you think it's good.
Yeah. You don't mess with the Zohan. Disco. Good. Bye Bye Birdie.
Okay.
Harold and Kumar Go to Mountcastle.
All right.
Bayo Watch.
Okay, sure. Why not?
Rain McMahon.
Rain McMahon. I don't know that I get that one.
I think it's Rain Man, the movie, which I also haven't seen. Top Gun Patrick.
I have seen Rain Man at least. Top Gun Patrick. Top Gun Patrick. Where's the Patrick fit in with Top Gun?
I think it's supposed to be Top Gun Maverick.
Oh, right.
Okay. And it's just any Patrick Sandoval, like no. Patrick, whatever.
Not good. Not good.
Deuce Biggio, Male Lodolo. I like where they were going with this one, but I think maybe we could have found better names.
So you're a big fan of the Adam Sandler movies. What about the Rob Schneider movies?
Big fan. Big fan. Yep. I watched Deuce Bigelow when I was too young to watch Deuce Bigelow, but it was, that movie is hilarious. Hot Chick is also a movie I've watched way too many times in my life. Arise Alive, Drive Ober. There's no way we're going to know what this is, but it's Arrive Alive, Drive Sober, a huge ad campaign in Ontario in Canada. Fraley, my dear, I don't give a damas.
Okay.
And lastly, last but certainly not least, Quan in the hand is better than two in the bush.
Spelled like Michael Bush, who is not a major leaguer yet, but he's a prospect in the Dodgers organization. Unless there's another Bush they're referring to.
I guess it could be Bush Stadium, Cardinals. But I think Michael Bush is probably the go-to there. Those were good. Those were really good. I appreciate that. Thank you, Neil. We're going to wrap there. For Scott, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.